Welcome to the Adventure Podcast and this specialist series, Explore How to Plan an Expedition, a series created for the Royal Geographical Society. I'm Matt Pycroft, an expedition specialist, filmmaker and photographer, and I've been going on expeditions under various banners for 15 years. I also sit on the council of the RGS. Episode 11 focuses on storytelling. In this episode, I speak with Leon McCarran about the need for stories, the nuances of journalism in storytelling, and how to get your story out there. We also discuss if everyone has the capacity to be a storyteller. If you're looking for support with planning your own expedition or field research project, then head to rgs.org to begin the journey. Right, let's get started with episode 11 of How to Plan an Expedition. So let's start at the start. Please, could you introduce yourself? Tell me who you are and what you do.
My name is Leon McCarran, and I'm a writer and journalist, but I guess really I'm a storyteller. I generally tell my stories by going on long distance journeys, often under human power, and using that slowness of pace and slowness of experience to immerse myself in places and have better access to the types of stories and content that I want to then tell.
Brilliant. And to give us some context, could you please give us kind of a top line overview of your expedition experience?
Well, when I was 21 or 22, I left university and wanted to see the world. So I set off on a bicycle and spent a year and a half cycling 14 or 15,000 miles, which I suppose is an expedition, but it was also a rite of passage and my way of trying to figure out my place on the planet. But what it taught me was, firstly, that I was capable of doing these types of journeys and of looking after myself in a way that I didn't know I was capable of, having grown up in Northern Ireland and then gone to university and done nothing else. And it also showed me that if you, the way in which we travel and the way in which we put ourselves out to the world is directly relevant and related to the types of experiences that we then have. So after that, I walked across China from Mongolia to Hong Kong, which was 3,000 miles and took 7 months with Rob Lowell. Then I crossed the Empty Quarter Desert, the largest sand desert in the world, on foot. I packrafted down the longest river in Iran from source to sea and rode a horse across Argentine Patagonia, following the last free-flowing glacial river in that part of the world. And what happened then? Then I did a lot of other walking things, and we're in 2014 at that point. So there's been another decade of things since then.
I think we're getting the picture that you're qualified to comment on what it is we're here to talk about today. And I'm filled with FOMO just listening to the background. So when it comes to storytelling, I mean, you just said as part of your introduction, your journeys tend to be slow. Is that deliberate, and what does that grant you as a storyteller, I guess? And a journalist, I think it's important to maybe make a distinction as well.
Yeah, so I think, the best piece of advice I've ever received, but bearing in mind, I started out, I always wanted to tell stories. I knew that I was interested in writing. I primarily initially thought I might be a filmmaker, and I did make some films. But writing is where my heart ended up being at, and through that journalism as well, but I find my way to that, you know, sort of organically. I didn't really necessarily have the tools to be a journalist to begin with. I was more interested in the experience, and then I learned the tools of rigor that are attached to journalism and truth telling and so on through that. The best piece of advice I ever got was to listen at least twice as much as I ever spoke in a conversation with anyone when I was traveling. And I've always tried to keep that in mind. I think I like to travel slowly and I like to travel simply, because I believe that when I meet people, that simplicity, that vulnerability you have, makes people more inclined to open up to you. There's lots of ways in which we can make ourselves seem more open and a more appealing prospect to talk to or share things with. And I think that's one of them. So I I like to walk. I get places that I wouldn't get to if I was in vehicles. And I like to travel in ways that seem suited to the place I'm in. So, you know, in Patagonia, I rode a horse because that's any way to travel there. It's the way people have traveled there for a very long time. You know, in the Middle East, I do a lot of walking because for centuries, millennia, people have walked through the hills there. You know, when I tell stories about rivers, I try to be on the river as much as I can. So I think there's a lot of connections between form and content that, you know, can sometimes seem arbitrary, but I think are very important. And I find that my mind works at 3 miles an hour, the same speed my body moves at. So if I'm walking and thinking and talking to people on a journey like that, then it's more likely to have a positive and accurate result than if I drive into a community and try to somehow understand what that place is or what people have got to say.
Yeah, and in that vein, you know, which is the cart and which is the horse? Are you traveling slowly because it's your preferred method, which results in the writing that you're doing, or are you traveling in that way because the writing is leading and you know that's what you need?
I think that both of these things are important. You know, these days I probably consider myself primarily a journalist in terms of the type of writing I'm doing. And I think there's a real need for the types of journalists to arrive in a place with a very clear set of questions, a clear set of outcomes that they want to take from that place, and then they move on to the next place, which may be quite far away or whatever, in terms of efficiency and speed of the reporting. That's very important to the world we live in. The thing that I think gets forgotten is the places, the spaces in between. You know, the world isn't made up of these definitive waypoints in news cycles. The world's made up of everything else that connects those kind of sinews and tissues of the connective world that we live in. And so the reason that I travel on these journeys is to hear those stories and find those things that connect one place to the next. So in the same way that, you know, if one wants to travel from the town that they might be in to the next town along, if you fly there versus if you drive there versus if you walk there, the amount that you will learn about how the land changes, how the people change, you know, how the social elements change, how, you know, accents change, any of those things. Of course, the slower you go, the more you see. So not everyone can do it. Not every story needs it. But I like telling stories that show it off. And I think that's probably where my skills would lie more so than anything else. And one of the other key bits of advice that I got early on in my writing career was to find the things that you're good at and you enjoy doing and do more of those. Rather than chasing something that might seem something you want to do, but may just not be as cut out for.
Yeah. And there are lots of rabbit holes I could run down here. I think I'll try and do one at a time. I don't know the answer to most of these questions, which is always nice. Do you think everyone has the capacity to be a storyteller?
Yes. Whether or not people tell, so there's a couple of things. I think humans tell stories. We've always done that. You know, we look back at our ancestors and we see, you know, artwork on the walls of caves. We see ways in which humans have always tried to depict the things that have happened to them and tell stories. We see from, you know, one of my areas of experience and expertise is the early civilizations that formed along the banks of the Tigris and Euphrates in ancient Mesopotamia. And we see from there, you know, from the earliest forms of writing, how people tell stories to impart lessons. We see from the oral histories all over the world. So it's something that we've always done. It's something that we'll continue to do. I think intrinsically, most of us realize what a story is and the power that it has, even if we don't realize that we're telling stories. But I also think that stories aren't inherently you know, a good thing. There's lots of terrible people who tell, you know, very powerful stories that have nefarious means to them, you know. So a story, you often hear people talking cliches about how, you know, storytelling is the way in which we bring good to the world, and it's the solution to, you know, lots of problems that get caught up in data or in sort of arbitrary policy or whatever it might be. I think story has the potential to be good and bad, and humans have the potential to be, you know, good tellers of bad stories and bad tellers of good stories. So maybe that's slightly dodging your question, but I think one thing I do believe for sure is that we all understand the importance of a story, you know, somewhere within ourselves.
And why, you know, it's very clear to me that there's a personal interest and a passion to your method of storytelling, your writing and your journalism, and that, you do correct me if I'm wrong, but obviously we've spoken lots before, and you know, it's of you, it stems from a curiosity, you want to experience these places and learn from them, travel through them. But extrinsically and potentially altruistically, why do you want to tell stories?
I feel like I want to tell stories because it's the way in which I've understood the world. It's the way in which the things that I believe in the most and have the strongest feelings about is the way in which they've reached me. And people are different. Everyone is individually affected, you know, in different ways by different methods. But for me, you know, if I hear something in a narrative way, it kind of hits me, you know, more effectively than anything else. And so if I feel like there's something important to say that my work can do, then to tell a story about it is the most effective way I can manage that.
Sure. But why do we tell stories? Is it to inspire? Is it to educate? Is it to entertain?
It's all of those things. All of those things are important to us. We tell stories, and we always have done, because it's a way to help, you know, help us understand the world. We tell stories because they're a way in which we enshrine, you know, lessons for life. One of the things I've been researching recently is, you know, kind of the Irish tradition of storytelling. I'm from Ireland, and you know, you have kind of these strange mythological folk stories that all seem very unusual and otherworldly, and then suddenly you realize that actually the story about, you know, the cow that wouldn't come off the field at the right time of year and had an argument with, you know, the weather gods isn't just a sort of silly folk story. It's about it's about how to manage your livestock and your agricultural cycle so that you don't lose animals to bad weather. You know, all of these sort of things I think are fascinating, and it's where it all comes from. Stories are also just entertaining. They're a way in which we've always kept ourselves amused. So I think there's lots of very good reasons to tell stories. There's lots of reasons why one might want to do that. I think the world that we live in is the one that I've stepped out into and spent all these years wandering in is very different from the one that I often see on the news and read about. And if I just stayed at home for the last 50 years, I'd be terrified about the world beyond, you know, my front door. And I think that's where some of the challenges that we have come from. But when I stepped out, I realized that the majority of people are good and kind and, you know, share similar values and want to look after one another. So I think there's a lot of, for me, storytelling is, it's a way to bring back those experiences of the world and explain some of the challenges that affect people in a big or a small way, and just to try and somehow balance out that, you know, where we end up. Like in the UK right now, we have this huge conversation going on around refugees and immigration, and I think there's lots of people whose hearts are very much in the right place, who do firmly believe that, you know, their country and their town will be invaded by evildoers from some far off place that they that they only know these, you know, broad, generalized, often falsified brushstrokes about. And so to be a storyteller who goes away and brings back a sense of what that place is really like seems very simple in many ways, but can also just be incredibly powerful in helping to reframe that narrative and potentially reframe the way in which someone might be welcomed into a country or someone might welcome someone else into a country, you know, and all of it might just come from wandering around somewhere else, asking people questions, talking about their lives, eating some food with them and bringing it back home.
But I think at the heart of everything you're saying is communication, methods of communication and how information gets disseminated. And you know, your cow and the weather gods is actually quite an interesting case study because, and I'll deliberately ask a silly question, but why can't we just tell people what will happen if they don't look after their livestock? You know, why? And I'm trying to think about this from the perspective of perhaps listeners who are planning whether it's a mountaineering expedition, they want to go and achieve X, whether they've done a research project overseas and found that a river is dying for whatever reason. You know, why can't we just say the river is dying because the levels of X are Y and that is bad? Why can't we just say, look after your livestock or they'll die? Why do people need stories?
Well, we can do that. And I think it's important to do that. And I think if we only had stories and we didn't have data and we didn't have, you know, the more scientific and practical approach to it, then, you know, we'd have lots of people with their hearts in the right place, but they'd have no idea how to save the river or no idea, you know, what to do with their livestock and when to bring them in for the winter. So I think all of these things work together. And again, I think it comes down to the ways in which individuals respond to, you know, to these various inputs. And it's we, for whatever reason, in however someone listening to this believes that we've been created or where we've come from, you look back at the very earliest forms of humans and even beyond that of our ancestors, and we've always tried to shape things in the form of stories. So clearly, it's the way in which we absorb information in maybe the most effective emotional way. And ultimately, we are creatures with emotions, you know, and stories provoke emotions. They provoke an emotional response and they make us care. They make us angry. They make us feel things in a way that a data point probably won't. You know, it's again, just not to keep coming back to this, but it's obviously I'm back in the UK for a break from my life in Iraq right now. And in Iraq, I live in a country where a lot of people are trying to get away to Europe to make a better life. And then I come back to Europe and, you know, I hear this endless conversation about how to stop people getting here. And you hear these, you know, you hear these atrocities being conveyed in terms of numbers of this many people or this many children died in a when a boat overturned in the Mediterranean. And even someone like me who is living in that part of the world and is immersed in those conversations day to day, you know, it's hard to actually feel any strong emotion about that because what does it mean? It's so distant and so abstract. But, you know, you tell the story of one person who left their home in a village in, you know, the north of Iraq in the mountains because they wanted to make a better life in the way that their parents' generation weren't able to do. And they went on this incredible sort of, you know, odyssey across land and sea, only to end up drowning in the ocean. You know, it would break your heart. And that's the power of stories in a way that can make, I think, great change as well as entertain and inspire and all these other things that we seek from them.
Do you think it's important to... Let's say that somebody listening to this is an early stage academic who's really interested in doing field science because they want to contribute to the wealth of scientific knowledge out there. To what extent do you think they have not necessarily just an obligation, but an opportunity to share and tell that story in a way that transcends data and journals when it comes to actually, you know, helping to fix the things they want to fix, to work on what they want to work on?
I mean, my personal opinion is that, you know, nobody's under any exterior obligation to do anything. If someone is an early stage, early career academic and they want to do these things because they They enjoy the field work. They enjoy gathering that and putting it together. Then I think that in itself is an incredibly useful contribution. I think, of course, if people feel like they want to tell stories but don't feel like they'd be very good at it or don't know how to, then that's something else. Then absolutely there should be tools and resources and encouragement and so on. But, you know, as a journalist and as a storyteller, I've just written this book about the history of the River Tigris. And, you know, so much of my research was based on reading years and years of work that was done by academics that probably only gets read by a few dozen people. Now, more people will probably read my book than read their work. Huge amount of work went into their research. It doesn't make one more valuable than the other. I think there's all of these things have their homes and all of them have their areas of importance. So again, I think it comes down to what do you enjoy? What are you good at? And how do you want to spend your time?
I'm really glad you said that. And I think it speaks to lots of the things we've spoken about in earlier episodes of this podcast around team, because as I understand it, you've often traveled as part of a team, sometimes bigger, sometimes smaller, but you had a role unofficially or officially on those trips, expeditions, journeys as a journalist. And I guess, I mean, it is a question, but it's also a statement of you don't have to be everything on that trip. You can be one thing. I don't know what your experience was like, maybe on the Tigris. You know, I think there were other people traveling with you. And did that alter or change the experience? Was that powerful? Did it add to anything by being part of a team?
Yeah, it really did. And, you know, I think this is something that we see a lot in those of us who work in the media see this a lot these days. There's a squeeze on budgets. There's a press for greater productivity. You know, young journalists these days are often encouraged to be all things at all times, to write, to record audio for radio, to learn how to take pictures, learn how to shoot video, you know, and to do all of these things. There's modern day Renaissance people who do somehow manage to do it, but they're in the minority. Most of us are better at one of those forms than others, and it's the same is true for anything. So I really believe in honing a skill or even a couple of skills and finding others around you that will hone theirs and bringing all of those things together, because, you know, I have done it in the past and I've done it to a poorer quality than I would have otherwise. I spent 6 or 7 months walking around the Holy Lands from Jerusalem in this big loop following old, you know, pilgrimage paths. And I did it primarily to write a book, but I also tried to make a series of short films. And I was, you know, trying to bring along an audience in a relatively in real time way through social media and taking pictures and so on. And I wanted to take some images too that I could use for presentations afterwards to help Cheryl. And I was on my own for most of it. And it was just way too much. And, you know, fortunately, I really focused on the book. So the video stuff and the audio stuff and the social media stuff kind of was of poorer quality. And I'm happy that I didn't, you know, completely lose everything. But I do think it's a long way of answering this, but I think finding others who are interested in the similar themes, the telling the same types of stories, but who have supplementary different skills is a really wonderful way to do things. And it doesn't always have to be people who will travel in the field with you. Maybe it can be someone who can help tell those stories, you know, from a distance or after the fact or in some other way. But trying to do all things at all times is a surefire way to do nothing well, in my experience.
Yeah, I think that's great advice on a few fronts. And I think, I don't know what your opinion is, and actually finding people maybe even after the fact who are interested in telling your story, whether that's, you know, at one end, somebody who is an expert science communicator, or whether that's the editors at Sidetrack magazine who would quite like to take your photographs and interview you and write it for you. Because there's an outreach part to this, which is it's all well and good doing a thing or making a thing, but what if nobody sees it or hears it or reads it? In your experience, like, how do you actually get this stuff out there into a place where it can be seen?
Well, it's an important question, but it's also one that can be debilitating if it's dwelt on too much. And I guess, you know, firstly, I think we were talking about journeys and storytelling with purpose here. You know, I think that's a really key thing. I think there's lots of great reasons to have adventures and go on expeditions for our own reasons to grow and see the world and better ourselves. But I think, you know, that's a separate topic from telling even stories that are designed to entertain and inspire. I think fit into the second category of having a real strong purpose, something that, you know, in a broad sense adds to creating a better world to live in. Even if it's in a small way or might seem in a simple way, all stories, I think, should aim for that somehow. Yeah, so I think if you believe enough in the purpose of it, then it's important to tell the story one way or another. Now, I think some of these things take time. They take experience. I'm a big believer in earning your stripes, in honing your skill. It's unlikely that the first stories that you tell, the first project you work on, will reach the zenith of whatever your career aspirations are. You know, if you want to make films in the outdoors, it's unlikely your first film will be directing for National Geographic. You will probably have to work your way over many years and many lessons to get there. If you want to tell those same stories through the written word, it's unlikely you'll have a piece in National Geographic magazine, or you'll get a book deal on the first go. So I think a lot of it is working your way up. At the same time, I think from the very outset, it's worth approaching the people and the media that you admire and sharing what you're doing, telling them your ideas, because a lot of the time you will get some feedback, and you know that will help start you on your journey. But I would encourage anyone who wants to tell stories to try and do two things that might seem, you know, at a tension with each other, to kind of have big aspirations to see where they want to go, to look at the writers or filmmakers or whoever that they admire, and keep that in mind and approach those publications and those people for advice, but also to recognize, you know, roughly where you feel like you sit in this ladder and scale, and maybe you'll go faster, or maybe you'll slower, or maybe you'll go at whatever speed you hope. But to be content that if you believe in the story and you're getting it somewhere, then, you know, that in itself is an achievement. And the next time you can aim for a larger platform. And the final thing I'd say on that is that the world that we live in now is completely different from the one that I or you might have started out in, let's be generous to both of us with our age and say, you know, 50 years ago. But, you know, social media now, it can be a huge way to tell really important stories. And that's not something that you need to have worked your way up through the ranks of some magazine or media institute to get to. You can just do something in a really compelling way and gain a lot of followers very quickly and reach them with your message. So, you know, new media, different types of media, can jumpstart all of this if you're creative and exciting enough with the way you do things.
Yeah. I mean, there's no right or wrong way to do it, is there? But often I think having some form of strategy and, you know, I think, again, a recurring theme here has been, don't be afraid to get in touch with the people who you want to work for one day. And I think, you know, rapid anecdote, I actually went to an open pitching session for the National Geographic Photo magazine probably 10 years ago, 8 years ago. And I will never forget she was the commissioning editor. I'll never forget what she said to me. It was, it stayed with me for ages. Now I say it to people sometimes when I'm hiring a cold house. She said, these photos are good, but they're not great. And I'm looking for great. And she said, but they're good enough that you've got permission to hassle me. Here's my email address. And so every year, once a year, I'd just send her a quick update with what I was doing, a select few images. And, you know, lo and behold, 8, 10 years later, whatever it is, I'm now working for them. But it took that long.
Yeah, I think it's those sort of things are really encouraging. I mean, if it's useful, and feel free to cut this if it's not, but, you know, two very personal anecdotes on a similar line for me, that the when I finished cycling, you know, lots of people were off on bicycle trips. I had no right to you know, make any career out of it more than anyone else. But before I'd set off, there was an author and cyclist called Rob Lilwall who released a book about cycling from Siberia back to the UK. And just before I set off on the trip, I saw that he tweeted something, you know, his fifth or sixth ever tweet saying he was in New York City and I was starting my bike trip from New York. So I replied to his tweet and asked if he'd meet up and just give me some advice. And I did. And he was very kind with his time. And he said casually at the end, if I made it to Hong Kong on my bicycle at any point, I should look him up. And so a year and a half later, I made it to Hong Kong and I looked him up. And him and his wife had me to stay. And it just so happened that that was the point at which he was thinking about seeing more of China. And I just cycled through China. He had some contacts with National Geographic. He was going to write a book about it. He was looking for someone to join him. And we got a commission to make a TV show. And, you know, he was writing a newspaper column. And suddenly I was associated with a form of storytelling and a sort of legitimacy that I might never have had otherwise. And it came from being open to the world. You know, it's the same way I then, after that trip, decided to write a book about the first part of my bike trip of riding across the US. Again, I had no right to get a book deal, but I looked for a publisher that felt like it matched where I was at in tone and also in, you know, level of projected sales. I chose an independent one that I really admired. I looked at the editors for that publisher who edited the types of books I wanted to write. One of them had written a book, so I read her book to see what it was like. I wrote the manuscript of my books. I knew no one would commission me up front. And then I sent it to her and said, would you mind taking a look at this? And she read it and 6 weeks later offered me a book deal. It wasn't particularly lucrative, but you know, it was kind of 100% hit rate for that. And none of this is to say that, you know, I had some secret key or I unlocked something. It's just to say that there's a lot to be said for being diligent, for doing your research and for working hard, but also just for being willing to get shot down and just being willing to contact people out of the blue and say, you tell stories, I tell stories, I admire what you do or admire what your company or institution or publishing house does. How can I get to where I want to be?
Yeah, I think they're amazing examples. And I think often, I don't know if you experience this, but people will say, oh, you're so lucky. And I think, well, there's definitely an element of luck. Of course there is. But actually, I'd say it's more chance, a lot of it. And I definitely stacked the odds. And it sounds like you did too. You know, you sent the tweet. And I guess where I'm going with this is you didn't email 50 publishers with the same email. You read her book. I mean, that's, you know, that's serious commitment. How personalized was that email to her?
Well, it was the sort of email I probably could have written without having read her book and just and could have pretended, but I'd actually read her book and I enjoyed it. And so I was able to just say, really enjoy your book. I really enjoy what the publisher was called Summersdale and really enjoy what Summersdale do. You know, I really loved how you write about this. And I meant it. You know, it wasn't kind of false praise. I really meant it because I'd really read it. I think if I'd read the book and not enjoyed it, I would probably just not mention I'd read the book. But you know, it was personal. I looked at the sort of things they produced and felt like they fitted me. I think that's another thing. Like you said, there's a lot of it's about working smart as well as working hard. And there's a temptation at any point in a career, but particularly early on, if you want to get your stories heard, to just write the same email to every single newspaper and say, you know, I've got this great expedition or thing. It would look perfect in your travel section and just, you know, kind of a copy paste thing. But the chances are the Telegraph travel is going to take something different from Guardian or Observer travel, is going to take something different from a magazine like Sidetracked. And your story is probably better suited for one of those. So, you know, find the editors who commission it, look up what they've commissioned recently, look who's been writing for them, read some of those things, reference them, you know, craft that email. And the chances are, even if you don't get a commission the first time around, that person will probably recognize this is someone who can mean business. And you might have an experience like you did of, you know, you're good enough to bother me in future. So keep in touch.
Okay, brilliant. Well, my final question is, what would you say are your kind of top tips for effective storytelling?
Top tips for effective storytelling. I think, firstly, you have to believe in it. You have to care about it. Very hard to tell a story that you don't somehow deeply care about. Secondly is, it's very hard to tell a story if you haven't been working to hone your skill. And I mean, it sounds very simple as well, but you know, if you're a writer, read and write. If you're a filmmaker, watch films and shoot things. You know, any of these things, it requires practice. I think spend a lot of time with the type of work that you want to create with the people that you admire, whether that's just watching their films, reading their work, listening to their podcasts, whatever it could be. And approach people, you know, ask for mentors, ask for advice, that kind of thing. And then in a more practical sense, you know, be really diligent, be rigorous. Rigor is, you know, the greatest thing I've probably learned myself. Take copious amounts of notes, really hone your system of how you gather your material and how you look after it. So you don't, if you drop a hard drive in a river, you haven't lost everything forever because you've got it somewhere else. If your notebook gets wet or you leave in a cafe, you know, you haven't lost every interview you've ever done for the last 2 months. Being really, really rigorous. Storytelling can be creative. It can be experimental. It can be beautiful and flowery and artistic and wonderful. But at its basis, it's scientific. You know, you do things according to a model that works, and you record everything with great precision. And so don't forget about that in your pursuit of something wonderful and creative.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And there's, I mean, you probably have heard this before, but there's the fantasy author, Neil Gaiman. He said this line that stayed with me as a filmmaker. He was talking about writers, but he said, it's absolutely okay to borrow someone else's voice until you find your own. Obviously referencing, you know, style and form. And I think that's really important too. You know, you don't need to be Hemingway tomorrow.
Yeah. And that's how we learn, right? I mean, we eventually all have to find our own voices. If someone tries to be Hemingway or Steinbeck, you're going to know pretty quickly. And anyone reading it is going to know pretty quickly. But it's only by going through that process that you kind of figure out what you can do and how well it goes. So, you know, so much of it is just practice and experimentation. And I mean, again, I think that one of the reasons why I started talking about, you know, some of these more, these different forms of storytelling at the start of this is I think storytelling can sometimes be seen as something soft, you know, something light. It's like, there's some people over here doing the real work, and then there's the storytellers who are going to make something nice and flowery out of it that you can tell the kids, you know, whilst the grown-ups are over here doing this thing. And probably rather obviously, I fundamentally disagree with that for, you know, a lot of the reasons that I've experienced. But one of my top tips for this too would be, don't let anyone lead you to believe that storytelling is not something fundamentally important that can change the world. And also, you know, don't start out with that mindset yourself. Don't take it lightly. Whatever type of story you're telling, it can be the story of your own experience on a journey that changed your life and may well change someone else's life, may well save someone else's life, you know, may well completely alter the way in which they view the world. It can be, you know, telling the story of gathering something very important scientifically or creatively. So, you know, this stuff does make great change, and you have to believe that. Otherwise, your stories won't hold water.
I couldn't agree more. And obviously, I'm biased. You know, you and I do similar things through different mediums, but I would argue that if one thing's going to save the world, it'll be storytelling.
Yeah. Well, I agree completely.
Cool. Well, that's been really insightful and really interesting. Thank you so much.
That's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. For more information on how to get started with planning your own expedition or field research project, head to rgs.org. This podcast is hosted by Matt Pycroft, produced and edited by Laura J. Cock for Terra Incognita Publishing, and Shane Windsor and Laura Melville for the Royal Geographical Society.